You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Kids are heading back to school. It doesn't just mean they're hitting the books. A lot of youngsters are also involved in fall sports.
Concussions are a big concern in any kind of contact sport, and a couple of new research studies provide important information specifically for parents whose children play tackle football.
We're going to hear first about a study that compared different helmets and the protection they provide. Tim McGuine is a senior scientist in the Division of Sports Medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation. Tim, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, football players have a lot of protective gear. The helmet, obviously the relevant one for preventing concussions. What specifically does a helmet do to protect specifically from the risk of concussion?
Well, originally helmets were designed to simply prevent skull fractures and skull lacerations. And it's only been in recent years when they've taken on a role to try to add supposed protective effects for concussion, the idea of making a bigger offset, making it more padding on the outside of the shell, doing some of the other things, and putting different types of padding in to try to maybe attenuate the forces that would be transmitted to the skull and the brain.
And out there on the market today, is there a wide range of material and design that's being sold?
The three major helmet companies are very, very similar in terms of they all have a polycarbonate-type shell. Some integrate some sort of Kevlar type material with titanium or steel face mask, some aluminum face mask. So the designs are not that dramatically different. They all, are designed pretty much the same. They look similar, so there are. But there are variations in terms of different brands and models have some specific changes between them.
And as I understand it, there are $100 models. There are also up to $500 models being billed as better, stronger, more protective. And that's where some UW research you worked on comes in. You looked at whether those more expensive ones were more effective. What kind of things did you find out?
Well, we looked at a lot of factors because concussions, if they were just related to the impact forces on the brain or to the helmet, it'd be easy to say, yes, that would be effect or a way to prevent them. But concussions are multifactorial, meaning that there's height and weight of the player, previous concussion history, the type of position they're playing, those type of things. So we looked at all the factors that we could in terms of the age of the helmet, the brand, the model, how many years the kid had played football. We even looked at whether they played youth tackle football. Would that make them more at risk? And we basically found that the helmets that were on the market that are most readily available, the ones that most schools purchase for $100 to $200, performed as well as the helmets marketed exclusively to parents to prevent concussions from some of the manufacturers. So some of the manufacturers produced a very expensive helmet, and a lot of the schools said, we can't afford this, so they marketed directly to parents. And our data showed that there really wasn't a difference, that a 3 or 4 year old helmet, if it was well maintained, provided by the school, offered the same level of protection as the more expensive helmets. And we need to say that the helmets really do a very, very effective job overall in reducing the incidence of concussions.
Now, when I think about a helmet being sold, I guess I imagine it's tested in a way like a crash test a dummy in a car would be. Am I right? Or what goes into factory testing?
Yes, and exactly, that's it. So a lot of the manufacturers, to meet certain safety standards, they will drop it on a force platform and have computer sensors measure the impact that it would attenuate by doing so by 5 or 10 drops and then making these assumptions. Our proposal or our methods are much different. We do have population-based studies. So over the last 5 years, we've enrolled 16,000 kids in different prevention studies in the state of Wisconsin. And that's a far more effective way to do it. So instead of dropping the helmet 10 times, we had 130,000 times where the helmet were worn and played in. So that kids put these on 130,000 times, and then we look at the rate of exposure and the type of concussions that occurred.
So that's much more of a real-world, in-practice kind of analysis than a drop test.
Exactly. I'm very leery about concussion studies that look at 30 subjects in the lab or drop the helmet 10 times. We need to do population-based studies. And when you control for all these factors like we did, even playing youth football, some people say you need to play that because you will learn how to tackle more effectively and prevent your concussions. Other people say, no, we shouldn't do it because concussions are cumulative. And by having more risk and as a youth, we're more likely to have concussions as a senior in high school. We didn't find either factor making a role. So kids playing youth football had no greater risk of concussion in high school than those that never played at all.
Talking to Tim McGuine from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health about concussions and protective gear in youth football. And we'll be talking more about long-term concussions and football in just a little bit. Tim, one thing I wonder, if I'm wearing a $500 helmet that I think is better, safer, it really isn't, though, might I play differently? Is there a concern that I think I'm at less risk so I don't play as safely?
That's a controversial topic. Some people think so. There was a soccer headgear studies where they had female athletes wear soccer headgear, and they looked at it, and they were said to be more aggressive once they wore protective headgear. I know that's out there, and some people, you know, say that. I would say that to some extent I believe that. The more we pad these kids up, the more invulnerable they may feel, and that our latest research shows, you know, simply just changing the way they practice can significantly reduce the rate of concussion, and those are far more effective than think we're just going to put bigger, stronger equipment on these kids. And it doesn't just, not just a helmet, but an ankle brace or a knee brace or shoulder pads, anything like that. It only has so much of a protective effect, and we don't want to make kids thinking, I can be invulnerable, I can still do unsafe techniques out there and be protected from an injury.
Now, as I understand it, one factor in concussion isn't just direct head impact, but if you're talking about offensive, defensive line people colliding together, it's the quick start and stop, even if there's not a direct head impact. Is that right? And if so, is the helmet irrelevant in that particular cause?
Right, the acceleration, deceleration. So again, I like to tell people, if you think of your brain as similar to an egg yolk, and we can pad that side, that egg significantly, but if we shake that egg quite a bit, that egg yolk would slosh around inside that shell. And then that, what you're saying is specifically the case, that the brain is essentially folding in fluid, and we stop and start suddenly, that brain would have a tendency to slosh around, and regardless of what type of impact took place on the helmet, that starting stopping could play a role.
Well, let's get back to the helmet. Does something like age of the helmet matter, using a used one, a five-year-old one, versus a brand spanking new one?
Well, you know, we thought that would be the case, too, and helmets were originally designed to last for 10 years with occasional reconditioning, meaning they would be sent back to the factory on a bi-yearly basis, or sometimes every year, to go ahead and look for micro cracks and clean them up and look for any defective padding. And we found that didn't seem to make a case either, that you know, a helmet that was 2 or 3 years old that was well maintained and well fitted to the athlete, there was no difference in the rate of concussion there. So a parent should not be thinking, hey, I need to buy a new helmet for my son every year, because in our study, again, with 192,000 times the kids went out and played football, there was just no difference.
And before we let you go, any thoughts on a fit, making sure a kid is wearing the right helmet when they're playing?
Well, I like to say that, you know, in the helmet designs have some individual characteristics that make them easier to fit certain types of heads. We do like to tell kids, basically, a helmet needs to be checked each week, and the player themselves are responsible to make sure it's properly fit, and that if they adjust pads or do things on their own, that could make it more at risk. So we try to really educate the kids and the coaches to do this. And by and large, the coaches in the state of Wisconsin do a fantastic job of making sure the kids are playing and tackling safely. They're far, far ahead of, I guess, most areas of the country in doing so.
Tim, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
That was Tim McGuine. He's a senior scientist in sports medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health.
Coming up, we'll continue the conversation about avoiding concussions and other brain injuries in youth football players. And we want to hear from you. Does your child play youth football? At what age did they start to play? And how concerned are you about possible concussions? You can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or post a question on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation after a look at the news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We just heard about recent research about whether more expensive helmets protect youth football players more effectively.
Now we're going to turn our attention to a study that shows that the age at which a child starts playing tackle football can have an impact on long-term brain health.
And we want to hear from you. Does your child play youth football? At what age did they start to play? And how worried are you about possible concussions? Do you feel that the league shows enough concern for their players' well-being? You can join the conversation by calling 800-64 421234. That's 800-642-1234, or post a question or comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
Joining us now is Dr. Robert Stern, professor of neurology, neurosurgery, and anatomy and neurobiology at the Boston University School of Medicine. He's also director of the clinical core of the Alzheimer's Disease and CTE Center. Dr. Stern, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks very much, Rob. Great to be on.
And Dr. Julie Stamm is also with us, currently a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. She conducted a study on the impact of the starting age of youth football players on brain injuries. Dr. Stamm, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you were the lead authors on this recent study looking at the starting age for tackle football, how it impacts brain health later in life. Dr. Stamm, why did you focus in on that variable?
So we were very interested in whether or not the age you started playing, given that children's brains are going through quite a bit of development, and we were interested in whether or not the age you started hitting your head would lead to later life problems. And we really focused in on that age 12 because there's a lot of brain development occurring and very rapid development occurring in the ages around age 9 or 10 through age 12.
And Dr. Stern, who are you looking at? You're looking at obviously people who are older and have played the game for a long time and then looking back at when they started.
Yeah, and that's a very important issue is in terms of the generalizability of our findings. This was a study of former NFL players, mm-hmm. not just your run-of-the-mill people who played a little bit of youth football or even high school or college, but these are a bunch of former NFL players, all currently in middle age between the ages of 40 and 65. And they're participants in another study of mine, a larger study of ours at Boston University called the DETECT study. And we're trying to figure out a whole lot of things about the long-term complications of repetitive hits to the head earlier in life. So that's the group that we looked at, former NFL players who are currently in middle age who are part of this study. And we divided a group of 40 of these former players into two groups. One group that started playing tackle football before the age of 12, and the other group that started at age 12 or older. And each one of those pairs were currently the same age. So we were really trying to make sure we're not looking at current age, we're not looking at the era in which people played. We're trying to really figure out if the age of the time someone started hitting their head and tackle football can lead to later life problems. But in this very select group of people who are former professional football players.
So, Dr. Stamm, let's hear the results. Comparing these two groups, these football players, some started before 12, some started after with tackle football. Was there a significant difference?
There was, and we specifically looked at a specific, what's called the white matter tract in the brain called the corpus callosum, and this is a pathway. Your white matter is like the connections and the superhighway connecting different parts of the brain. And this particular pathway connected the two sides of the brain, the two hemispheres of the brain. And we saw that the integrity of this pathway was altered or reduced in those who started playing at age 12, or I'm sorry, before age 12, compared to those who started playing later.
And does that, Dr. Stamm, have a symptomatic result? If there's that difference, would we observe different behavior, different risks of cognitive decline?
So it's possible. We didn't look at that specifically in this study. However, in an earlier study that we did actually see differences in thinking and memory and verbal intelligence as well. So we can't say that specifically from this study, but we have seen that in our previous research.
Well, Dr. Stern, let's go back to the beginning here and talk about that brain circa age 12. What is happening in the brain that might make that a really relevant time of year for the future long-term impact of head injuries?
Sure. Well, at that time of life, the brain is going through this incredible and rapid development and maturation. So a variety of parts of the brain are growing, developing greater connections, getting larger. The white matter tracts of the brain are getting myelinated, meaning that they're getting this kind of fatty substance around it to make them communicate faster with other parts of the brain. And so during that key period, all this fast development is occurring. And so what might happen is that that period of development might create this potential window of vulnerability, a neurodevelopmental window of vulnerability, that if you hurt the brain during that time period, there may be greater consequences than if you start hurting it at another time in life.
Talking to Dr. Robert Stern and Dr. Julie Stamm about their research on early tackle football playing, starting around age 12 and earlier, and its possible long-term impacts on people who go on to play football for a long time. We'll go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. Greg is on the line in Augusta. Greg, hi.
Hi. I'm a 68-year-old college football player. I'll try to make this brief, but I started playing full contact in the eighth grade. I was a starter in high school as a sophomore, a starter in college as a freshman. I had my bell rung. We used to say, we got your bell rung. I got my bell rung, maybe four or five times. In college, a couple times real bad, where I was down and out for the count. But I went back in the game both times. So here I am. I'm 68 years old. I wish I could be evaluated, but I think I'm none the worse for it.
Greg, thanks a lot for the call. So, Dr. Stern, is there any way to know, looking back at age 68, if having your bell rung, which we now take more seriously these days as a concussion, could be impacting him? I know you can't diagnose him over the phone, obviously, but how do we know something like that?
Sure. Well, the caller actually raised two very, very important issues. One is that not everyone who started playing football at an early age or had a huge, lengthy, successful career in football is going to have later life problems. I think there's been this huge amount of media hype and other hype suggesting that overall football ain't good for you, and that's really not the message. We don't know who specifically is going to have long-term problems, and it's not going to be everyone. In this study of former professional football players, the ones who started playing earlier had a greater likelihood of having difficulties in certain parts of the brain. The other important thing the caller raised is that we're not specifically looking at concussions. Concussions being those hits to the body or the head, resulting in the brain being jostled around and then having subsequent symptoms of having that bell rung, seeing stars, feeling nauseated, having headache, feeling in a fog, all these kinds of things. What we're really concerned about in this study and in other areas of our research is what we refer to as the subconcussive trauma, the repetitive head impacts that don't necessarily result in symptoms of concussion. And in a typical youth player, there's data out there where they put these special accelerometer gizmos in the helmets of the players. They can have hundreds of hits above a certain threshold of G-force, above 15 G. Hundreds of hits above that threshold per season. A typical college player may have in the high hundreds on average, or 1,000 hits above that threshold per season. So we're talking about the hit after hit after hit that doesn't necessarily result in any symptoms, no diagnosis of concussion, et cetera. It's part of what is kind of inherent in the game of football. And it's those repetitive hits that seem to have a potential impact in some people later in life.
And Dr. Stamm, this is one study among others. It's not a huge study, but based on what you're looking at there, do you have thoughts, maybe even recommendations for how we should approach tackle football for kids 12 and under?
That's a great question. And right now, based on the research, it's too early to really make any recommendations. It's very important that we make recommendations based on the best evidence. And while this is the very beginning, and we really need more research in order to really understand how these repeated hits to the head can affect children then later in life. It does, however, kind of make sense that hitting your head repeatedly as a child and when your brain is developing may not be a good idea. So it's definitely something, we do need more research, but it's something to definitely consider when considering, having your child play football. But I also want to say that sports are incredibly important for kids. And the goal of this research is to make sports and make football safer for kids, because there's so many great benefits of sports that we don't want to discourage people from playing sports. We just want to figure out how we can play the game more safely.
We'll leave it there. Dr. Stam, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Stern, thanks to you as well.
Thanks very much, Rob.
We've been talking to Drs. Julia Stam and Robert Stern. They're the lead authors on a recent study that looked at youth football and its impact on brain health. It was published in the Journal of Neurotrauma.